This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas. Tara Menzies, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
It's such an interesting conversation. I would never have had this particular conversation had my wife not been pregnant. What is hypnobirthing?
Well, to be honest, there's a lot of different views on what it actually is. My basic explanation is always just that it's relaxation exercises combined with antenatal education. So, you know, there's no kind of hypnotism involved, which is always a relief for people because the word hypno can put people off. It did for me when I first heard the word. I was like, oh, hypnobirthing, what does that mean? But it really is, it's just when you're deeply relaxed, the use of like positive language and words around birth and exercises like breathing exercises, visualizations to help change the way we think and feel about birth. And that helps our body to relax and helps our body to work as it's been miraculously designed to do. So the beautiful thing about hypnobirthing is even though it sounds kind of like woo-woo, it's completely grounded in logic and physiology.
I was going to ask you about that woo-woo thing because it does sound a bit hippie-ish, you know, like let's all get hypnotized, because that prefix hypno is a little bit, it's off-putting.
Yeah, it is. And I totally think a lot of people probably, well, lots of hypnobirthing practitioners probably agree that hypnobirthing could totally do with a rebrand. But for me personally, one of the reasons I decided to create Christian Hypnobirthing was because when I was pregnant, I was told about hypnobirthing as a way of decreasing anxiety and increasing relaxation and helping you have a better birth. But as a Christian, I was like, oh, it'd be great if there was like a faith-based version of this. And so Googled Christian hypnobirthing and nothing existed, which would just started me thinking like, gosh, it would be great if someone would create that, you know, to be able to have a version that can also resonate with your faith. That was important to me, or resonate with my faith.
Well, you're a Christian hypnobirthing teacher. It's quite loaded. Firstly, what is Christian hypnobirthing and how is it different from hypnobirthing, and what do you teach?
So Christian hypnobirthing is basically my own creation. There was no Christian version of hypnobirthing when I was pregnant with my son, Charlie. And so for me, it was basically just taking what already, you know, worked in hypnobirthing, in that I, throughout my pregnancy with Charlie and then throughout my birth, the difficulty of that birth experience, I was just like, gosh, I really could have used some exercises and tools to help me ground, to keep grounded throughout labor. So after his birth, it just kept coming to me to create a version for Christian women. And it was quite a long process of putting it together and combining encouraging scriptures and sort of intertwining them with the standard hypnobirthing breathing, which is up breathing is an exercise, which is basically, in basic terms, it's just like a shorter in breath and a longer out breath, which is what helps you come back into the parasympathetic nervous system, which is basically like our rest and digest, you know. So that's what you want to be in when you're in labor, because then your body's able to work as it's designed to. Whereas as soon as you go into the sympathetic nervous system, you go into that fight or flight state and your blood and oxygen starts rushing to your arms and legs and away from the uterus. So the uterus isn't able to work as efficiently and comfortably as it should be working or could be working. Whereas when you're deeply relaxed throughout labor, it generates more oxytocin, more endorphins, helping to make labor as efficient and comfortable as possible. So basically, it was just a process of combining all those wonderful tools that are in hypnobirthing with beautiful scriptures and prayers to help bring in that faith aspect.
I think there is something profound, though, about the idea of birthing being Christian, because obviously birth, you know, is it's a foundational aspect of life. You know, without it, there is no life. And I think the idea that you're trying to impart on people is that there's nothing to fear. This isn't a medical condition.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it in a nutshell. I think like most of us have been so programmed from birth, from our own births and watching TV and film our whole lives, you know, to fear for everything so much. And especially birth. And not only that, we've been told so many negative, you know, horror stories by our aunts or our mom or, you know, all kinds of people. And even like when you're pregnant, I found like I'd even have just 50-year-old men like calling out to me from across the street, you know, saying like, oh, you just wait, my wife had the worst birth. And, you know, and you're kind of confronted constantly with fear-inducing stories. And so it's interesting, the whole word hypnobirthing, because it sounds like some kind of programming, but actually what it is an unprogramming of like the years of fear that we've had our whole life. It's not to make you think that birth is just some perfect, easy experience. You know, it's hard work. Even people who have very easy births, like my last birth using the tracks was a much, much easier experience than my first birth, but it was still hard work. So I don't ever want to give the idea that it's just like you use the tracks and then it's just this like, you know, effortless thing, because it is. Your body is working really hard, but it can be a really beautiful and positive and faith-filled experience. And that's really what I feel my job is to help women to understand that and to know what's possible and to know that it can be a deeply spiritual experience, no matter what kind of birth you have, that God will be there with you through it.
So ultimately, hypnobirthing is a paradigm shift. It's moving away from the idea that it's this ridiculously painful, scary experience into something that doesn't have to be. And if you can break out of the mindset and find the aspects that make it less painful because it's linked to your mental state, then it's a far easier process. Is that correct?
Yes, basically, as I was saying about the oxytocin, like the hormones in our body are literally designed to help birth to be as comfortable and efficient as possible. But adrenaline works as an antidote to oxytocin. So as soon as we become fearful, as soon as we get, it often is like, it can be as soon as we get in the car to go to the hospital, or as soon as you walk into that hospital, you've got bright white lights, which are, you know, many of us know about how synthetic blue light impacts melatonin, for instance, like all of these things that are happening that are the opposite of the environment that's the best for a physiological birth. So to feel comfortable and to feel good throughout birth, for your body to want to go into labor in the first place, you need to feel safe. It needs to be a dark environment, like or dimly lit. It needs to be private. You need to feel completely safe with the people that are there. You know, most of the time we almost would want to be on our own while birthing, or at least with just very, very trusted loved ones. And that feeling of privacy and a complete lack of disturbance, like when you think about animals when they go into labor, they seek out private spaces instinctually. And so when we go to a hospital and there are these bright lights, there are beeping machines, there are people rushing around with like emergencies, as much as we can logically think to ourselves, like, I'm safe, I'm in the hospital, this is where I'm meant to be. You know, you can't kind of logic the limbic system out of doing what it's designed to do, you know? So our nervous system is like, whoa, 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 this isn't a safe space for me to be. So as soon as your body's then going into the fight or flight state, it's going to try and shut down labor and slow down labor, which is just such a predicament for people, because obviously you go to the hospital, then the hospital wanting you to give birth because they've got beds that, you know, they don't want you like taking up a bed if you're going to take ages to give birth. And then you've got all these rules in place of like, you should be dilating at this number of centimeters per hour. They start enforcing all these different things like, well, if you know, if your labor's slowed down, which is because your body's trying to protect itself, and then it's like, well, we're going to give you some Pitocin to speed things up. It's really hard. Like there are a lot of challenges as soon as you enter the hospital system. But despite that, we do have so many of our app users and course members who have really positive hospital births regardless, because, you know, it is more work than, for instance, if you're giving birth at home with, you know, a very experienced, wonderful midwife who knows how to allow you to labor kind of undisturbed, but she's also watching to make sure birth is progressing as it should be, you know? So it's that balance of like, she's experienced enough to know when she has to step in, but experienced enough to also allow the body to work most of the time without actually needing to do anything. But when you do enter that hospital system, you really have to have such a strong mindset. And if you can have a doula or a, you know, or your birth partner really, really supporting you and advocating for you and sort of working to protect that space. Yeah. that's going to be you, Jem. So get ready.
But Tara, isn't the goal just to get the baby out?
I think that's very much how so many people view birth now. It's like, well, you've got a baby. That's all that matters. Or, you know, like, and I get it. Like, I think the unfortunate thing about that is we've now come to a place where there's like no risk tolerance whatsoever. So people want this kind of guarantee that they're going to just get their baby. But the problem is that it's like, it's just not that straightforward, you know? So people walk into all these decisions and unfortunately there's like often language that's used that is, well, it's highly dramatic and you know, I don't want to say coercive, but it's like if someone starts saying, well, you know, if you want your baby to live, then you better do this. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like if someone uses that language where they start talking about, well, if someone, I've had so many people say to me that that's what they were told, like, well, you know, if you don't care about your baby dying, like if you start saying that to a pregnant woman, all a pregnant woman wants is her baby to be alive and to be safe. And she will do whatever you want. You know, like she'll just be like, okay, I'll do whatever you say because that's all I want. So it's really easy to get women to agree to induction or any kind of interventions that they don't really fully understand the impact, you know, and it's really hard. Like it's really hard. I know it myself because I went into my first birth thinking like, oh, I want to have this beautiful, peaceful, unmedicated labor, and then found myself being pushed into being hooked up to an IV and having continuous monitoring, even though it's not evidence-based for healthy, normal, like pregnant women to have continuous monitoring. It's actually a protection. Birth is one of the most litigious industries in the world. And so it, you know, having that continuous monitoring is a protection for doctors basically against being sued if anything was to go wrong, you know?
Yes, exactly. What you're saying is that the system is now designed around protecting the medical staff, not the baby and not the mother, because they don't want to get sued.
Yeah, I mean, it that, and there's, you know, there's a lot of data that's showing that now. And I, to be honest, I don't want to be one of those kind of people who's just down on obstetricians or the medical system, because I think it must be incredibly hard to be a doctor and to constantly come up against the threat of being sued. You know, I mean, accidents do happen sometimes, you know, like there are incidents where things are unusual. Overall, studies show for like a normal, healthy pregnancy that birth is incredibly safe. But even then, things can still go wrong. So, you know, as a doctor, like you've worked 30, 40 years and then all of a sudden you're going to be sued. You know, like it must be incredibly stressful to have to do that, even if you've done an amazing job thousands of times. But in an instant, there's a tiny thing that happens that seems like it's, you know, it must be incredibly stressful. And I know it's very stressful for midwives as well. So, you know, it's a really hard industry to be in. And in that way, I think it's very sad because we're losing touch with really that love and connection that mothers really need. during the birth process and leading up to the birth process, they need to be nurtured, you know. And instead of nurturing, you know, they're hooked up to these monitors, and often the staff are much more focused on checking the monitors, and they're not even really in communication with the mothers. You know, like there's a lot of stuff going on that feels so disconnected now. It's such a polar opposite experience to, like, for instance, I was just with my friend Lindsay Mieles, who is an amazing midwife in California, and I got to go spend the day with her in her clinic. And the love and connection that those, that her clients are getting, you know, like just the time and their sort of her really going through fears, you know, what are they feeling? Whereas you go in for a 6-minute appointment in the hospital with your obstetrician, it's not really, you're not connecting, you're not going through kind of all the stuff that you've got to process mentally and emotionally to be ready for birth. It's kind of like, well, we've checked your bloods, your urine sample, and you're good to go. And it's like, there's so much that's been lost. So, you know, Lindsay will often talk about how the midwives were traditionally the wise women. They were the people who brought life, helped support life into the world, and helped also as people left this world. And a lot of that tradition has been lost now. It's a difficult sort of situation worldwide, I think, with birth. But I have faith that step by step, you know, we're making progress and bringing it back to, I feel, the really beautiful experience that it should be.
Yeah, I like that you said bring it back, because this is not a new idea. This is closer to natural order. This is how it was for the longest time. As Stuart Fishbein has said on his own podcast, the over-medicalization has only really occurred in the last century or so. So what you're saying is you kind of want to see hospitals not as the default, but as the backup option.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you have a healthy, normal pregnancy, there are so many high quality studies out there that say in terms of safety, it is just as safe to give birth at home with a fully qualified midwife that has the transfer option to hospital available as it is to give birth in the hospital. So there are the same rate of adverse outcomes at home in a healthy, normal pregnancy with a midwife who's able to transfer to hospital as there are in the hospital. However, as soon as you go to the hospital, you dramatically increase your risk of cesarean, forceps, induction. Your risk of intervention increases substantially. So really, if we're talking about safety, you know, including interventions, you're actually better off at home, you know. So obviously these things have to be weighed up personally, because it's easy to say that, but if you happen to be one of the people who doesn't have a great outcome at home, even though it's very rare, then you have to live with that. And the reality is people can be very cruel, you know, like people can be cruel to people who have home births. They can be like, well, if you'd gone to the hospital, but it's not really true, because when babies pass away in the hospital, people just say like, oh, that's a, you know, it's a tragedy. If you're in the hospital, you don't get blamed is basically what I'm saying. So it's not actually fair, but it is something to take into consideration. You have to take responsibility for where you give birth. It feels like a big decision for me. Now I live 5 minutes from the hospital, and I would, if I was giving birth today, I would feel really happy to give birth at home, because I've had 2 births, vaginal unmedicated births. And, you know, at this stage, I wouldn't be considered high risk, although I just turned 36, so I'm officially geriatric. Otherwise, I would be very happy to give birth at home here. Whereas if I was an hour from the hospital, I would not be happy to give birth. So everyone at home. So everybody has different risk tolerances, and it's really a very personal decision as to what's right for you.
Are hospitals open to the idea of hypnobirthing?
Yeah, definitely. So many hospitals, especially in the UK, that's where I gave birth. My husband's English and we were living over there when I had my babies. It's pretty standard. Almost all hospitals in the UK recommend hypnobirthing. Some of them have hypnobirthing courses that they teach, you know, and that was part of why, like, I also was really wanting a faith-based version was because, you know, it was popular, but it's like, for me, just some of the language didn't resonate with me when I was listening to different apps and things, you know, if they said kind of like the universe or you're in a goddess or whatever, that language didn't resonate. So that's why I was like, it would be beautiful to have a faith-based version. So it's definitely like common, especially in the UK and Australia and in the US as well. There's a lot of hypnobirthing. We're trying to do things also to make it more kind of hospital friendly. We recently added a faith-filled cesarean track as well, because we don't want it to be like, oh, you can only have this beautiful, faith-filled, peaceful birth if you're having like an unmedicated home birth or something. Like, a lot of people, that's not going to be what's right for them for various reasons. Some people really do need to have a cesarean as well. Like, I don't want to ever try and make out like it's just everyone should have a home birth. Some people do need to be in the hospital as well. So we really want to try and help people, no matter what kind of birth they're planning, to feel that love and peace and support throughout their birth.
What sort of feedback have you received over the years from mothers who've done both, let's say, home hypnobirthing and perhaps the over-medicalized birthing experience?
Well, a huge number of our app users are mums who have previously had traumatic experiences in the hospital, and they realize that the medical system is not what they had thought it was going to be, in that they sort of trusted whatever they were told and then found their birth went in a direction they really weren't expecting. And so many of our app users are people who have come from having this traumatic birth experience. Then their second pregnancy, they're like, I am not going through that again. Like, I do not want to have that experience again. And so they find us and then they do the course, which is our faith-filled childbirth course. They learn about the physiology of birth. And then there are lots of these like aha moments where they're like, oh, I see, like my body actually isn't really able to work as it's designed to in that environment. You know, like it's like I'm trying to get my body to do something that's really, really difficult for it. And that's why I needed to have Pitocin. It's not because my body's broken. You know, this is the sad thing, is so many people think like, oh, my body just doesn't work, or like, oh, there's just something wrong with me. It's like, no, there's nothing wrong with you. Your body was trying to protect you. Your body was doing what it's designed to do. It's unfortunately the system that is broken, you know, and the system that fails women. Women don't fail. And it's very rare that there is like a genuine, like, you know, sometimes the whole thing of like, oh, your pelvis is too small. It's actually quite rare, like that women have like deformities in their pelvis. All these things that women are told as if it's their fault, it's really often not their fault, or most of the time it's not their fault. It is all kinds of things in the medical sort of setup and the way things are that just aren't conducive to physiological birth. So yes, we have lots of women who have experienced both, and lots of beautiful testimonies and so many beautiful birth videos. And I really recommend, like, if your listeners want to start changing their mindset around birth, like one of the best things you can start doing is watching positive birth videos, reading positive birth stories. Yeah. Sometimes it's confronting. Like, I know that some people are like, ugh, I don't want to watch a birth video, you know, but actually it's a really important part of starting to change your mindset, because you don't necessarily realize that the birth that you've rehearsed over and over again in your mind is not the birth you want to be rehearsing. You know, like the kind of things you've seen in films, that's not the birth you want to be thinking about.
I don't know how to phrase this, but it's something I've been thinking about a lot lately. And that is, what sort of benefits do you think there are, longer term benefits, to babies that are born through the hypnobirthing process in a, let's say, natural, non-medicated process at home, versus those who have gone through the over-medicalized process? Are there psychological long-term impacts perhaps on the baby?
There are all kinds of fascinating studies and research coming out about how much babies are actually impacted even by a mother's stress levels during pregnancy. And this is why I'm always like, when people sometimes people think like because they didn't have the perfect Instagram, you know, birth that they'd envisioned, and they think like, oh, it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. And so like it all went out the window, or they think hypnobirthing didn't work. But actually, no matter what kind of birth you actually have, even if birth plans have to change, you have never wasted time, because every moment you spend practicing relaxation during your pregnancy, you are bathing your baby in all those beautiful relaxation hormones, oxytocin, dopamine, serotonin, helping your baby's brain to actually develop the sort of artistic language side of the brain. Whereas if you are spending a huge amount of time really stressed, especially chronic stress, there are studies that have shown that it can impact the baby's brain in that it grows the kind of fight or flight survival side of the brain more. And so it's really great to know that, you know, it's never a waste of time to practice relaxation during birth. Like it's really good for you and your baby. Like it's good to help you to feel good and to help them to feel good. And then in terms of the actual birth itself, you know, there's data that's showing like babies who are born via cesarean are far more susceptible to different diseases, you know, asthma, all kinds of things. Like it's, there are huge benefits for a baby to go through the birth canal. It helps set up their microbiome as they go through the birth canal, because they're getting that bacteria from their mum. They miss that if they're born via cesarean, and that really impacts their immunity. And not only that, like things like as they go through the birth canal, even the fact that they're squeezed, as they're squeezed, it releases cortisol, and that cortisol helps them to clear their lungs, you know. And sometimes babies that come out via cesarean have more trouble breathing. So there are all kinds of benefits for the baby. One of the things, and this is something I can't say I've seen any data on or anything, but just from what I hear and what people have shared, is just what they've noticed is the level of calm, like the difference with, for instance, their first baby, if they had a traumatic hospital birth and a lot of stress, and their baby's like struggling to breastfeed, and like the baby's struggling as well. And then in their subsequent birth, when they've had this sort of relaxing, beautiful water birth, and just that they've had a more calm baby, and that the baby's slept better. I mean, this is just something that people have told me. So I can't, again, I can't like kind of say like, oh, this is a fact and it's the same for everybody. But it's just something that I keep hearing, and it makes sense. It's like if you've literally just come out of the womb, all you've ever known is your mum's heartbeat and feeling warm and loved and, you know, safe. And then all of a sudden you're thrust into this environment, and to be able to come out of that and be greeted by warmth and immediate skin to skin with your mum, you hear her heartbeat, even your chest heats up to regulate your baby's temperature like perfectly as soon as they're born. There are all these things which just work so beautifully. But if we just take that baby away, you know, like, and start performing all these sort of routine, like weighing them and scrubbing them down and doing all these things to them, which are totally unnecessary. Like they've just been brought out.
And injecting.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. And it's like, they've literally just been born, and you're just thrusting all of these things upon them. And it must be incredibly distressing. It really makes me feel sad sometimes when I think about like the starts that people are having to their life. And I think it's like 90 or more than 90% of births now have Pitocin used. So even if it wasn't used during the labor, it's routinely injected into women's thighs after birth to, you know, stop postpartum hemorrhage. And while obviously it's incredibly helpful to be able to stop postpartum hemorrhage, there's also the option to kind of observe bleeding instead, and to give Pitocin if needed, as opposed to just sort of routinely giving it. Pitocin potentially is impacting the oxytocin high that a woman would naturally have right after giving birth, which bonds her to her baby, helps with bonding, helps with breastfeeding. And so if you interfere with that bonding in that moment, there's such a high level now of postpartum depression, breastfeeding issues. And the saddest thing to me is that women are blaming themselves, but I just want to be like, it's not your fault. There are all these things that are happening that are just completely unnatural and they're not supporting us. And yes, they're really helpful in an emergency. Oh my gosh, I'm grateful that we have access to life-saving drugs when they're necessary, or life-saving surgery when they're necessary. But it's just how much they're happening when there's no medical indication for them, which is worrying.
What impact does medical intervention have on the baby? Like, for example, when they numb you?
Epidural?
Yes, epidural. I went completely blank. Yes, epidural.
Epidurals are a really interesting one. I've read different things and some of them suggest that it basically breaks communication then between the mum and the baby during labor. I want to be careful what I say because I don't want people who have had epidurals to feel, you know, guilt or sad about it.
Yeah.
You know, so I just need to kind of like, I want to be sensitive to the fact that a huge portion of women do have epidurals. And yeah, if someone's been laboring for a really long time and they're exhausted, I think like having an epidural gives them an opportunity to have a rest. And often they come back then and they actually have the energy they need to get baby out. So it's not that epidurals are always a bad thing, but there are a lot of things about epidurals that aren't necessarily great. For instance, when you have an epidural, often it can sort of relax your muscles in a way that the baby isn't able to necessarily push off as effectively or even maneuver themselves the way they would normally be able to help get themselves down the birth canal. And then if it does sort of slow labor down and then Pitocin is then used to kind of speed labor back up, the intensity of the Pitocin contractions is far more intense on the baby, but mum's not feeling anything, you know, like, so mum's not feeling this, but the baby's feeling it the whole time. Like, so the baby hasn't had an epidural as a result, there's a higher level of cesarean because babies go into fetal distress. Then you also have people who have epidurals, they have a fantastic birth and everything's great. So it's like, I don't want to like scare people, but it's like, once you start introducing these different interventions, you impact kind of the whole delicate dance between the mother and the baby of birth, you know? So it's just to kind of keep that in mind. And one thing I think is great is that there are so many tools that you can use to help you to feel comfortable in birth before reaching for an epidural. Like a lot of people just think that an epidural is the only thing that they can do to feel comfortable. But actually, if you are doing those different things, you know, literally just the breathing exercises to help you stay in the parasympathetic nervous system, for starters, will help enormously. Warm water, they call that like the midwife's epidural, to get in a warm birth pool or using the warm water in the shower can provide an enormous amount of comfort. Birth combs, you use a comb that you brush your hair with and you hold it in your hand, pushing kind of just under here, like I guess under the fingers, and you hit this acupressure point that is really good for helping you to feel calm. But it's also because of gate control theory, your body can't focus as much on two things at the same time. So it takes the focus away from the sensation of the surges or contractions. And it really does seem to work. I didn't use it in my births. It wasn't kind of like a thing back then. But more recently, I see people using it all the time. And people always tell me that they're just like amazed by how well it works. And then also like, if you need medicated relief, if you get to a point where you're like, actually, I feel like I need something, you know, more than warm water or breathing or a birth comb, gas and air is something that they use in the UK all the time. And that can really help. It also leaves the system quite quickly. Like you know, if you don't like the feeling of it, it's like 15 minutes and it's kind of gone from your system. So there are just different options. And I think it's great to also have those tools available to you because sometimes epidurals don't work. So mothers who go in expecting like, I don't need to think about any of this stuff because I'm just going to have an epidural. Sometimes when epidurals don't work, then it becomes a very traumatic experience because they have nothing to fall back on and they didn't realize it was even possible that an epidural couldn't work. So it's always great to go into labor with many tools to help support you to have the best experience possible.
One of the other aspects that I didn't know until recently is how bad it is to lie on your back. I mean, it's no mammal does it if you think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, one thing I always think about, and I'm sorry to, I try not to be crude, but I always think about like if you're walking around in the forest and you need to go, you know, for a number two, you're not going to lie down on your back, you know, like you're squatting, like that's what you do. And so it's just a totally logical thing. Like the fact that we lie down on our backs is completely absurd. Like there are different stories about why we do that. I don't know if you've heard them. People talk about like the French king that wanted to watch women give birth. And so he like got women to lie down so he could sort of see better or whatever. And then because people heard the royal family were doing it, then they wanted to do it. So there are like different stories about why it started, but now it really kind of comes down to provider convenience, that it's more convenient for the medical staff if you're lying in a bed because it's easier to have continuous monitoring. It's easier for them to perform an episiotomy if they want to, you know. So if you want to protect your perineum, being upright is a great thing to do because it's not as easy for them to get in there with the scissors. And it just makes so much more sense physiologically. Like you've got, if you're upright, you know, you've got gravity helping to move baby down, and it's just, it feels better as well. And it opens the pelvic outlet more, like as in like, the baby literally has more room to come through the pelvis. It just makes a lot more sense to be upright. That's another thing that is not so great about the epidural is that once you have an epidural, it is much harder to be upright without support. But if you do have the epidural and you want to help with opening the pelvic outlet more, you may be better to be like side lying and use a peanut ball. That can be helpful. But you know, that's one of the great benefits to laboring without an epidural is just that you can move around. You can bounce on birth balls or sway, or you can dance. Dancing is great for oxytocin. Squat, pull on things, you know, really getting that image out of your mind that you have to be lying on your back with your feet in stirrups, which really makes no sense at all.
Is one of the reasons for trying to remain in a state of relaxation during labor to minimize or restrict the release of adrenaline, for example?
Yeah, I mean, adrenaline does play a positive role during basically transition. So in the initial stage of labor, when your uterus is pulling up and out of the way of your baby, that's when you really want to stay as relaxed as possible. And that's when, you know, your body will, you'll go into like that kind of labor land where you're just really operating like on autopilot. Time gets sort of strange and you want to be in that zone where you're not activating the neocortex. You're just really relaxed. You're not having to answer questions. You're able to just sort of labor in peace. And then as soon as your uterus has pulled up and dilated and effaced the cervix, and it means that, you know, it's basically at the top ready to push your baby down. That's when your body gets a useful kind of adrenaline surge that gives you that energy necessary to push your baby out, kind of like wakes you up. And so it's not a totally negative thing, but then as you push your baby out, once your baby is out, and when I say you push your baby out, your body really pushes your baby out. You know, like the uterus is pushing your baby out. You don't need to do force pushing. This is another thing that's like not evidence-based, to be like yelling at women to push and then they like strain and actually cause tearing and can often even cause, you know, like a lack of oxygen to the baby by doing force pushing. So it's just like you know, if you've got a provider who's yelling at you to push, tell your birth partner to make sure that they know to stop them. So long as baby and mom are doing okay, you know, if they're monitoring baby, baby's doing great, mom's doing great, there's no reason to like rush the pushing process. And all of that, that adrenaline that then like once baby is out, like all that stress that people kind of go into doing all the, you know, the rushing around is, it's not great for mum, because she needs to have those peak oxytocin levels at that point so that the uterus can clamp down on the wound where the placenta has released and stop the bleeding. Adrenaline is like an antidote to oxytocin. If she doesn't have that continued relaxation as well after birth, then that's when, you know, it can really increase the risk of postpartum hemorrhage. So a beautiful thing you can do, the birth partners out there listening, is give mom a massage when baby's just been born, wherever you are. If you're down by her feet, like massage her feet. If you're near her shoulders, massage her shoulders. Just remind her that she's safe. She's doing an amazing job. And it just helped to calm her nervous system, because the adrenaline at that point is not great. You really want to, you want baby to go to mom's chest and you want everything to just calm down. And that's going to help that oxytocin and just, you know, help protect against things like postpartum hemorrhage. So relaxation is so important. Obviously every birth will look different, and it doesn't mean you have to breathe your baby out in some kind of serene, you know, way where you make no noises. Trust me, I was super relaxed in my last birth. And then during pushing, I was pretty sure I was saying a few profanities and also doing a lot of like mooing, and you kind of, it's like almost like a primal thing like takes over. Like I have very little memory of what I was doing, and that's fine. Like you don't have to think that, yeah, don't worry about like, if you need to make noises, make noise, you know, just like let whatever needs to happen, happen. But then as soon as baby's born, to just bring that beautiful relaxation back in. So it's in different phases, because actually as the uterus is going up, it's like that relaxation. During pushing, it's different again, as I said, with the increased adrenaline. And then afterwards, again, back to like that real relaxation if you can.
Does that state of calmness improve the speed of labor?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, sometimes it takes longer, like as in first time labors, generally speaking, take longer. However, I was literally speaking to a first time mum yesterday, and she used our course and app, and she had a 6-hour labor for her first birth. You know, I mean, that's pretty fast. Like that was from start to finish. I think most people would be absolutely stoked to have a 6-hour labor for their first birth. And she just like really, she just was so dedicated with like, she listened to the tracks every night. We have a track on the app called Gratitude and Creative Visualization. And, you know, world class, like the top athletes in the world use visualization. It's really about programming in and rehearsing, like vividly imagining the birth that you want. So you feel this confidence. And because you imagine it so vividly, your brain can't tell the difference between what's real and what's imagined. And you're instilling that confidence that it's possible. And that way, if you've literally practiced, as soon as you feel that tightening starting to happen, instead of tensing up and pushing away, you're welcoming it, going, oh, this is good. You know, I surrender, I release, I embrace this sensation. You know, whereas when you're really scared and you don't know what to expect and you're like, oh no, as soon as you tense against it, you get trapped in that fear, tension, pain cycle where the fear causes you to tense up and the tension causes pain. Then you become more fearful. Then you become more tense, you know, and it just gets worse and worse and worse. And you slow down the muscles being able to move. You slow down labor even being able to progress. And in some instances, you even stop it completely just because of the fear, you know. So yes, it really does impact how fast labor can happen. And the more that we can embrace it and really mentally train our body to relax, open, surrender to those sensations, the more efficiently it's able to do it.
But not just the speed, the calmness, the state of relaxation, would it also potentially reduce the level of pain?
Yeah, absolutely. Because endorphins are like your body's natural pain relievers. And there are some things that say that they're like potentially 20 to 40 times more powerful than morphine. So if we're in that relaxed state, our body is literally generating more endorphins to help us cope and to make us feel more comfortable. So not only is the body able to work more efficiently, but you genuinely feel more comfortable. In my first labor, I was very stressed, very fearful. It was incredibly painful. My second labor, because I'd practiced using the tracks on the app all through pregnancy, and then in my actual labor, I just continued to listen to them. And when I got to the hospital, they didn't think I was in labor. They were going to send me home. They let us stay in a waiting room. I was just sat in a waiting room practicing. And it started to get more intense. At that point, I was like, oh, it's getting more intense. I must have like another 10 hours to go. So I get up on this bed that they'd brought and I was like doing cat-cow sort of movements. And then I was pushing on a wall. Then I felt like I had to go to the toilet. And my husband calls the midwife. She comes with a wheelchair ready to take me to a labor room. And I was already giving birth. And he was born on call. So in the sack, my waters never broke. Just really rare. I think it's like 1 in 80,000 babies or something, they said. And I think they were shocked. They were like, oh my gosh, what do we do with this sack? But it was, they recorded it as 12 minutes of active labor and 8 minutes of pushing. And honestly, the majority of that was really manageable. Like it was very intense towards the end, like very strong, intense feelings. But I wouldn't necessarily characterize it as painful, just more like incredibly strong and intense at the end. But the whole labor was really manageable. It wasn't a painful experience. It was like a very manageable, and then towards the very end, strong experience. And maybe during crowning, I felt like a few moments of pain, and it was intense. But, you know, it was just so much easier than my first birth. And that relaxation absolutely had a huge impact. And it was nice to experience it myself, like using the tracks, because I was like, wow, like this really does, it really works, you know, it really does help keep you relaxed. And yeah, it was just such a different experience.
Your second labor was at home, I think you said. How long was that?
Both my labors were in hospital. So both times I was meant to go to a birth center, and both times the birth center was full, which they said like never happens. The first time that threw me out completely and like really sent me into that fear, tension, pain cycle. Whereas the second time I was just like, of course it is. And my husband and I just like laughed and just really did our best to kind of not let anything throw us, you know, like as in, I think because I'd worked so much on my mindset in that second pregnancy, it was like, no matter what you throw at me, I'm staying in this beautiful faith-filled state. And, you know, I don't care if you put me in a waiting room, whatever you want to do, like I'm just going to stay in this zone, you know? So I don't know what the first active labor time would have been. I guess probably 12 hours. And then the second one, you know, obviously they recorded it as 12 minutes of active labor, but it would have been longer. They just didn't realize I was in active labor. I mean, it was a significant reduction. It was longer because I was sitting in the waiting room laboring by myself, like in the dark. I just turned the lights off and like it would have probably been, I reckon it was probably more like an hour. But yeah, a much, much, much easier experience. And this is the same thing that we hear from many of our app users as well, that night and day experience from their first birth experience.
I know that hypnobirthing is a mindset that can be applied also when you're in hospital, but why did you choose to go to the hospital?
Because we were in a market town in the UK, which was half an hour drive from the hospital, but maybe in traffic, probably could be like an hour and a half. Also, I knew nothing about birth in my first birth. Like I really didn't know about the benefits of home birth or anything. And to me at that time, home birth would have seemed kind of crazy. Like I didn't realize that it was, you know, I didn't really understand that actually it was a totally reasonable option for me as someone who had a healthy, normal pregnancy, and that I could have, I mean, it would have been amazing. I wish I had. For my second birth again, I could have had a home birth, but because it was just the distance thing, I just felt too far being out in this sort of country town that we're in. If I'd lived in the city near the hospital, it would have been different, and I would have felt much more confident having a home birth, basically.
Have you had a lot of positive feedback over the years? I mean, I have. When after I interviewed Stuart Fishbein, who spoke about the over-medicalization of childbirth, I've received hundreds of emails, mostly from women, saying that they had a home birth and it was far superior to the other birth, which was in the hospital.
Absolutely. Literally everyone says to me, oh my gosh, like I wish I had known how amazing home birth was. I would have done it for all of my births, you know, because they were just like, to actually be able to give birth and then be home and just be in your own bed and your midwife like tucks you and your baby up and gets you like, and you've got beautiful food there and you can just go to sleep. And then the midwife like cleans everything up and like takes it away and you're home. You don't have to go anywhere. I mean, it sounds amazing. Cause the thing is, it was like after my amazing birth with my second son and it was so easy, I wanted to just be like, cool, thanks so much guys. High five everybody and like walk out. But instead we had to sit around for, I don't know, like 8 hours while they did different tests and checked things. And, you know, it was just all those things of kind of like, I don't know, bureaucracy really. That's like, you have to tick these different boxes. And we were like stuck there in this, then in a sort of room with all these other beds and women, you know, like other people. And it's just, I don't know. It wasn't like really enjoyable to have to just then sit around waiting in the hospital for hours and hours. So, yeah, I think the idea of being home would be so beautiful. And just that during your labor, you know, you're in your own space. It's your space where you feel safe, you feel relaxed, you know, like you're all those things that you have to combat when you go to the hospital, all the things that trigger you and make you feel stressed, even the smells, like the smell of disinfectant and stuff. They're not smells that like make you feel relaxed, you know. So just to be home and be in your own relaxing environment, and even just to be able to like eat and drink when you want to, you know, like a human being. The fact that you get into hospital and they're like, no, you're not allowed to eat or drink anything. It's like telling a marathon runner that they can't eat or drink, you know, like you are preparing, you're in like one of the biggest physical events of your life, and they're not letting you eat or drink anything, you know? So there are a lot of policies and things that you have to deal with in hospital that are often based off like outdated evidence and don't necessarily make sense anymore, but they might not get around to changing them for another 20 years. Whereas you go home, when you're at home, you can, you know, a lot of the time, home birth midwives in particular, they really understand what supports physiological birth. Like they're the experts in physiological birth. So you're just so much more likely to experience a physiological birth if you're with someone who's an expert in physiological birth, as opposed to someone who is an expert in surgery. Obstetricians are amazing at what they do, but a lot of them haven't even necessarily seen normal births. Have you seen the documentary, The Business of Being Born? It's really worth watching if you haven't seen it.
I know about it.
Yeah, it's worth watching just because, you know, there's this fantastic moment in there where they ask like, oh, have you seen a normal birth? And like virtually none of the people in the hospital that they ask have actually ever seen someone give birth just without intervention. So if you're wanting to have that like a more, I don't know, natural or like uninterfered with experience, then you've got a much better chance of it at home, basically.
You've spoken a lot about your app. Tell me about that.
Well, it's called Christian Hypnobirthing. It's available on App Store and Google Play. It is a series of tracks, breathing exercises, encouraging scriptures, visualizations that you can use both during birth to help you like with visualizing like images like a rose opening and things like that that help with dilation. And then you have the visualization exercises that are more about the kind of overall experience that you want to have, even your pregnancy. There are early pregnancy tracks to help with feelings of nausea and just helping you to feel your best in pregnancy. There are tracks for postpartum encouragement and breastfeeding. There's a track for cesarean birth. So it's really about giving women this support and encouragement to build a faith-filled birth mindset and to help them feel that beautiful peace, you know, the peace that surpasses all understanding, that comes from knowing that God's with you on this incredible journey. And that can be combined with any other birth course, like if you're doing another birth course. But if you're not doing another birth course, I'd really recommend doing our faith-filled childbirth course if you can, because doing some kind of birth course, we always recommend not just doing the app, because the app is just the relaxation, but always combining it with childbirth education so that you really understand the physiology of birth and also the impact of different interventions and where you give birth, who you choose as your care provider, and how that's all going to affect your whole experience.
And it's christianhypnobirthing.com.
Yeah, it's christianhypnobirthing.com. Also, give us a follow on Instagram if you'd like to. You know, our Instagram, Facebook is just called Christian Hypnobirthing. We have a private Facebook community as well called the Christian Hypnobirthing Community. And it's such a beautiful space where mums like often share positive birth stories, ask questions, pray for each other. We've even had some mums connect and catch up, you know, in person. So it's a really beautiful space. So come and join us there if you'd like to.
Tara Menzies, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
Thank you so much for having me, Jerm. It's been great.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please visit supportjerm.com.